Welcome to Gonkcast, an Autechr podcast. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And we're back with yet another bonus episode about your emails. Plus, we'll essentially wrap up the main discography of Autechr's mysterious side project, Guestcom, by looking at a pair of Guestcom remix EPs titled This and That. For our next proper episode, coming in a week, we're going to dive into Autechr's remix work by selecting and going in depth on our top 10 Autechr remixes of all time. Then, to make sure we cover even more AE remixes, we'll do another episode on our listeners' favorite remixes. There won't be anything scientific about it. We'll just try to discuss the remixes that you guys seem most enthusiastic about as a whole and that we didn't cover on our own list. That means we need you to email us and tell us, one, what your favorite Autechr remixes are, and two, why you love them. We've heard from a bunch of people already, but we want more for sure. Email address is in the show notes of every episode, and it's gonkcastpod@gmail.com. All right, Dan, what do we know about This and That?
Yeah, Guestcom's This and That were both released by Scam Records on May 20th, 1998. That's about 2 months before Autechr's LP5 and Guestcom's mini-disc. These releases are extremely mysterious, even by Guestcom standards. They're also very hard to Google. on This, Autechr remixes three well-known Guestcom tracks, though one of them, Viral by Advanz, aka Rob Hall versus Guestcom, is from a pretty obscure 12-inch. But then there's a track called Pelt Remixed by Velocity Kindle, and no original Pelt exists, nor does anyone know who Velocity Kindle is. Listener Steve speculates that it's Andy Maddox, founder of Scam Records and frequent Guestcom contributor, but I guess we'll never know. That is even worse, since none of the original Guestcom tracks have ever been released, and none of the remixers are credited with anything except for these tracks. One track, Chunge, is supposed to be remixed by Guestcom themselves, but listener Joe captures the resulting confusion when he asks, a previously unreleased Guestcom track remixed by Guestcom. Would this mean that it was a finished track by X and Y Guestcom members, and then Guestcom member Z reworked it into a remix? Of course, many have wondered if Sean and Rob aren't just pulling a little prank by crediting completely new tracks to made-up aliases.
Yeah, and I'll just add that the sleeves for both of these releases are extremely minimal. It's not even clear which is the A-side and which is the B-side, but that includes two strange inserts, a black-and-white photo of the so-called Manchester Baby, the first electronic stored program computer built in Manchester in the late 1940s, and a fact sheet about this machine titled Fascinating Baby Facts. Oh, and in regard to reception, This and That can probably be described as very overlooked. Both have about 50 ratings on Rate Your Music, just slightly more than the Skull Snap EP, for crying out loud. And they're sitting at a 3.57 and a 3.19, respectively. So, we were lucky enough to get track-by-track commentary from two listeners on these releases, listeners Steve and Joe. So, I think it would be fun to just walk through them that way, kind of rapid-fire style, starting with This and its first track, unless we've got the sides mixed up, of course, Keynell, remixed by AE. Listener Steve wrote, the Keynell remix on this one retains the crunchy hip-hop beats. Perhaps they felt this remix was more appropriate for a Scam release than the other AE remixes, which were released on Warp. And listener Joe wrote, I was extremely disappointed to find that there's actually a Keynell track I don't love. It feels like when some rock band like Radiohead has a song you love remixed by an artist you like. The resulting track is fine, and it contains certain recognizable elements from the original, but it doesn't live up to either the original or the promise of the remixer, and it just feels like it doesn't need to exist in the first place. All the ideas here have been done better elsewhere. So, Dan, what do you think about this additional Keynell?
Yeah, I think Joe summed it up pretty well. You know, it just sort of doesn't really need to exist. I don't think it adds anything to all the other Keynells that exist and are much, much better. This one sort of annoying, even just just with that, like, I don't know what the sound actually is, but it's sort of playing the role of like the hi-hats there. And it's just like incessant and kind of loud. And I don't know, it's just very, very repetitive, like not in a good way. And it's my least favorite track on this whole EP, I'll go ahead and say.
Wow. Yeah, I don't like it that much either. It's kind of like, I don't know, I think back about the other Keynells, and this is only true of them in varying degrees, but it's like, there was a certain kind of purity and like simplicity to them that was kind of beautiful. Like they had kind of a, you know, there was this lots of crunchiness and lo-fi qualities, but it was generally kind of this clean sound, lots of strings and stuff. And I don't know, just like really, really pure and beautiful. And then this one has been so kind of bit crushed. Like there's just this big, super bit crushed kick. Everything is kind of like crumpled and like squishy sounding almost. And I don't know, it just ends up sounding like this almost rave up, like not quite. Like it kind of reminds me of the stuff I don't like from the Anvil Vapor kind of era, where you've taken this beautiful, like pure, clean kind of piece of brilliance on the other Kino releases and just crumpled it into like a kind of generic and as you mentioned, go nowhere, kind of a slow rave up thing.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, I think, you know, like Joe said, it reminds me of those sort of remixes of, it's like somebody remixing something and they didn't really understand the original intent or like what made the song like special or good in the first place, you know, and just sort of, I don't want to say ruin it, but just, you know, make a really pointless version.
Yeah. I mean, I do like the kind of submarine ping sounds that join in there, but I don't know. There's like a couple of interesting elements, but it really feels very long. It is kind of long, but it feels even longer than that.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
it just doesn't do anything. But all right, moving on to Pelt, remixed by Velocity Kendall. Listener Joe wrote, Pelt is pretty cool, but is there a version not remixed by Velocity Kendall that I somehow missed? The funny thing about this track is that it's no different from normal Guestcom, where you have absolutely no idea what was AE, if at all, and what was other people. The main synth melody and overall mood remind me of June 9th by Boards of Canada, probably only because I am now convinced BOC joined Guestcom on Kino. And listener Steve wrote, I love the intricate melody layered over a brooding bass line, a deep crunchy beat, erratic drum work, and more deep bass. This track is so beautifully composed. This one used to make me tear up a little. It's been over 20 years, but this track still pulls at my heartstrings. One of the best tracks by Autechre and Guestcom combined, 10 out of 10. Wow.
Wow.
What do you think of this one?
Yeah, I do like this track a lot. I'll go ahead and say it's my favorite on this EP. And it probably is one of the best Guestcom tracks.
Interesting.
You know, it's really interesting. You know, throughout the last few episodes, we've kind of talked about how Guestcom is, you know, since Autechre is like so far out there, that Guestcom is like sort of the conservative project, you know, which is kind of the opposite of what you know, side projects normally are. But this one, I feel like could almost be an Autechre track, or it could, you know, if this was like on an Autechre record, I wouldn't, you know, question it or think it was too, you know, conservative or anything. It's really interesting that bass line is, you know, like super awesome with those drums and everything. It's just an all around great track. I really wish it was on, you know, one of the higher profile Guestcom things.
Yeah, it's interesting because it sounds like extremely tri-repete to me. And this is kind of one of the weird things about this release is it's like, it doesn't sound like 1998 at all, where Autechre was at that time with the LP5 and stuff going on. It really sounds like firmly tri-repete and not even all the way into Chiastic. Like there's a lot of that like lo-fi crunch and like bit crush stuff, but it's, I don't know, it's just treated in a much more like tri-rep way somehow. And yeah, I mean, I think this one is really cool. I think definitely a highlight. It's got a, you know, cause it sounds like tri-rep, but it's almost like too melodically epic to be like a tri-rep track. It's not so minimal.
Yeah.
It's just quite gorgeous. And what I love about it is like, so you got like lots of glitching out kind of hi-hat rolls and lots of like dirty artifact heavy kind of like time stretched, like those like swooping kind of kick sounds. Lots of like, you know, office equipment type clatter like Autechre loved to do in that mid 90s period. And then this kind of weird, like, low harpsichord-type bass riff, which is very doomy sounding to me, like, quite menacing. And then joining it is kind of this, like, blippy lead that eventually forms into, like, a pretty simple but, like, pretty loop. It just, like, prettifies this whole doomy, menacing thing all of a sudden.
Yeah. It creates like a really neat like dichotomy. I do wonder, like, do you think that this record, you know, even though it came out in 1998, like, is it old stuff that, you know, maybe has been sat on or what?
I think it has to be. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that this is, like, from some earlier time, and we could sort of return to this, but I'm just, like, very skeptical of the idea of these being, like, remixes at all, honestly.
Yeah.
And it just feels like more Guestcom stuff from the kind of specifically like Kinel remix EP era or something, and you know that they were just sitting on. I like feel firmly about that.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same boat there.
Well, let's move on to Viral Rival, remixed by AE. Listener Joe wrote, I think Viral Rival is the standout here. I love how the melody comes in at 108, and the entire track feels like a lower-res version of selected ambient works. In general, though, I feel like this one is one of the muddiest mixes they've ever made when it comes to sound design, aside from that crisp synth lead that comes in around 2 minutes. This is almost like a completely alternative direction they could have gone in for the Chiastic era, but one I'm glad they didn't, since there was a ton of music that sounded like this, and nothing that sounds exactly like Chiastic. The track gets far more interesting toward the end when the original part cuts out and you only have the synth lead that starts getting manipulated in ways that sound almost proto LSEC NTS. What do you think about this one? A highlight for you?
This is another really good track. You know, this one and the last one are definitely the best on this EP. I really do like that that synth, how, you know, it just, it's like someone switching through the octaves on the you know, on the,
it's one of those, I wrote down like one of those special Autechre sounds that I don't even know how to describe right.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, definitely. And I think Joe's right. It does sort of like give a little, you know, proto NTS sort of look, you know, with the way that synth you know, becomes its own thing at the end and manipulates it in such a interesting way. It is a little bit of a muddy mix, but I sort of wonder too, because you know, since these have only been released on vinyl, like everything we're listening to is like a vinyl rip, and I do sort of wonder, you know, is it just poor ripping? We'll get to it, but on the other one, there's some like really bad clipping and stuff, but I think it's I don't know if it's the record or the you know, the rip of it, so I'm hesitant to criticize for those kind of things.
Yeah, I have the same thought, honestly. I mean, I agree that it's a muddy mix, but I kind of like that it's, I would describe it more like dreamy, honestly. I agree with like sort of the comparisons to even LSEC and NTS that far ahead, but I wrote down, like, it sounds like Amber, but bit crushed, you know, like if they made an Amber track in the Chiastic era, what it would sound like, because it's so kind of lush and dreamy, but dirty and glitchy at the same time. And lots of like this kind of glitchy fluttering on the percussion over the top, but just like that really dreamy organ that then kind of bends into like a pretty, like a very pop, like very catchy melody. I almost like, this is going to sound like an insult, but I don't mean it as one, but like it's, it reminded me of like Moby or something, like mid-90s Moby.
That does sound like an insult.
I know, it's so catchy, but it made me think of like that movie The Beach, which I don't really particularly like, but the soundtrack is like all that Moby era kind of stuff. And I don't know, it just has like this really dreamy feel. And then like that lead is just so special. It just feels like it's so beaming and bright above the sort of murk, as Joe mentions, that it just sounds like it's kind of floating over this bit crushed ambient bed and has this kind of like floating wandering feel that I just find like so hypnotizing. I mean, I feel like I can easily say this is my favorite track here.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, this one and the last one are easy, you know, top of the EP, you know, sort of heap on this, and even, you know, Guestcom as a whole, that these two tracks are both fantastic.
Now, listener Steve urged us to check out the original Advanz versus Guestcom version of this track, noting that, quote, the remix adds a squelchy melody that helps bring the track to life. So did you check out the original? What did you think?
Yeah, I did. The remix is much better. I thought the original one is sort of, and I think Steve alludes to this, kind of lifeless. It just sort of happens, and it's not very like arresting or incredibly interesting or anything. I think the remixed version is much, much better. I can't remember too. I think the original one is a bit longer too, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe, possibly. It feels longer for sure.
Yeah, it definitely feels like I can't remember.
Just like not much happens. It's so weird because they add that like magical lead melody, mm-hmm. and you just have to hear the Guestcom remix once, and it's like this is incomplete. Like you'll never like the original again, I think, once you've heard the remix, because it lacks that like captivating lead. It sounds like a little bit kind of clubbier, like more dance ready. Yeah. And it's mm-hmm. got this kind of like chopped vocal sample running through. It just sounds very like a kind of club track almost. The organ riff is not as magical or catchy to me. It almost is like a little bit more mysterious sounding, and actually much more Boards of Canada sounding to me. I don't know, like slightly generic. And I just don't know how, it doesn't seem like that much change, but like the small changes they made it way more magical.
Yeah, definitely. And this will speak to it. You know, I thought the remix was longer, I thought the original was longer, but the remix is actually 54 seconds longer. That'll tell you how I feel about it.
Yeah. Okay. One more track from this, Mag 3.1426, remixed by AE, which remixes a song we both hated from Guestcom EP2. Listener Steve wrote, I used to play this all the time as my bass stereo test record. It's so funky. And listener Joe wrote, it makes me really wish Sean and Rob would finally just produce a really awesome hip hop album with some insane rapper. The name makes me wonder if one of them tried typing out as much of Pi as they could remember in the file name, but they forgot the 159 between the 4 and the 2. Or maybe I'm just a complete nerd who writes into podcasts with Pi-related Autech or conspiracy theories. So what do you think of this one? Does it fare any better than the original?
Yeah, I think so, but not highly. In fact, my biggest complaint, I think, with this EP is you have two like absolutely fantastic tracks sandwiched by two not that great ones. You know, like the Keynell remix, worst Keynell, and then this one, it's not bad. I think it's probably better than the first track, but it's still. I mean, it's a cool hip hop track, but it still sort of has that like feel of it's bumper music for a TV show or a YouTube video, you know, like, you know how my complaints were. It just sort of sounds like royalty free a little bit still. I don't know. It's just like kind of a little generic for, you know, Autechre to be involved.
I mean, I feel like this is a lot better than the original Mag. And by the way, Mag was like, I think the better track on EP2 by quite a lot, but it still kind of sucked because it was so stiff and like sounded mm-hmm. so amateur with like the way it was using loops. And this one just sounds like not amateur at all. Like this sounds like a masterful,
yeah, I'll agree with
kind
that.
Of hip hop track. And it's like there are a bunch of things I find interesting about it. Like the bass line is almost like a modern trap kind of bass line, but it's like 8-bit version of trap or something. And it's just got like a very like dark kind of, you know, almost East Coast kind of like minimalism to it. It uses those two kind of like very traditional 80s hip hop, like bursts of sounds, but just like in a much, they're just like mixed into the thing much better. It all just sounds like much cleaner. It reminds me of Wagon Christ a lot, which I like Luke Vivert's project, which I love, like kind of irrationally, just a lot. And gives me that same kind of vibe. It's just like, I don't know, feels really good. It really is funky, but I agree that it's weird. Here's something I got to propose to you though. On Discogs, I don't know why I said that so weird. Discogs, it's reversed where the first track is Viral Rival and then it goes to Mag. So it's like the A side and B side are flipped, but everything I've seen has it the other way. And all of our listeners wrote in describing it the other way. So it's kind of like, I feel like it would actually be better if you did consider this the A side, because then it starts with a bang with Viral Rival and then it ends with a bang with Pelt.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. Because everything I've always seen, and I had this downloaded, you know, prior, and mine was in the order we used it. But I think that would be right. You know, instead of having like the two great tracks sandwiched between the two not so good tracks, it is sort of like, I think, a better thing to come in hot, chill out in the middle, you know, and then come out hot, because then you sort of, you know, you remember. I think you remember you know, the first and last of a record, yeah. Or you know, your interpretation or your feelings on it. So Yeah. I think that probably is the better track listing.
Yeah. And if you're going to have a weak track on a 4-track record, like make sure it's number 3. I don't know why, just make sure that's where it is because it's the least remembered song. But okay, so wrapping this one up, listener Steve and listener Kino both wrote in to call this their favorite Guestcom release, period. What do you think about that?
I mean, I can see why they say that. And, you know, it's definitely one of the best. It's just, you know, we've got 4 tracks here. We sort of complain that one's not good, one's okay, and then 2 are great. So it's hard to say it's the best release because, you know, half of it's not really, half of it is like so special, and then the other half is you know, just kind of okay at best, you know. So it's difficult for me to say that it's the best, period. But it definitely deserves more recognition, I think.
Yeah, I feel like it's just kind of, it's got like a couple highs, but they're not like high. They're not like original Kinell EP high or anything. But the not as great tracks are still like solid, I think. Like I've really enjoyed putting this on, listening to it all the way through. Like never had any problem with that. Like never felt like skipping or anything. Like I could listen to it over and over again. It's not like super special, but it's just so solid. I feel like it's a great addition to the Guestcom, you know, discography.
Yeah, I can agree with that. And you're right. You know, the lows here are not as low as some of the other Guestcom lows. That's for sure.
Yeah. Okay, let's dive into that, starting with its first track, Chunge, remixed by Guestcom. Listener Steve wrote, the low melody going on through Chunge reminds me of something on Chiastic Slide. And listener Joe got a lot more creative with the comparisons, writing, it sounds like a Stomp Plays Richard D. James album with spoons on a trash can, but digitally manipulated in post-production. Definitely one of the more interesting highlights of this and that. So what do you think about it?
I love the Stomp Plays Richard D. James. You know, that's like, if you just listen to the first 10 seconds of it, that's describing it perfectly. I do like this track. It's pretty good. I'll say I don't like this EP as much as the first one, but it is good. I don't know. This track, it's got a lot of like energy and it's kind of fun. I just don't think it hits like the high of anything from this.
Yeah. I mean, I think in general, this EP is a lot like faster and more energetic and like lots of like really heavy, fast beats. And, you know, this one comes right out of the gate with this kind of like old school drum machine kind of like fast beat thing. What's weird about it is that the beat kind of transforms 3 times over the course of like not a crazy long song.
It's only
5 minutes. So, you know, it starts with this kind of cool hip hop things, sort of moves into like a really kind of dubstepy like wub wub thing all of a sudden and like very pummeling. And then it like slows way down and just gets like more bit crush blown out, but just like kind of heavier with like a pretty spooky ass bass note thing kind of shining through at that point. I mean, the thing is, it's like, I'm kind of like into all the different parts, but the fact that it over the course of 5 minutes just keeps changing makes it feel like a little aimless, like just kind of a dumping ground for a couple okay beats, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Cause I do sort of like each of the parts individually, but it doesn't super come together as a whole. Maybe if it was like longer and there was more like reason for the change, you know, like maybe some, better transition, let it breathe a little longer, but you're right. You know, like just kind of speeding through these different, portions like in such a short amount of time, like doesn't 100% work. It really does like sort of give it kind of like a demo-y, like, you know, which of these things works best kind of feel.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I sort of like it, but it just doesn't feel like fully cooked. But next up is A57 remixed by DC Duos. Listener Steve wrote, I quite like A57 and some of the sounds here are reminiscent of Lego Feet, though overall it's a much more serious and mature composition. And listener Joe wrote, I think the beat and the melody are pretty cool, but it seems like the ideas are just not quite developed all the way. It's a nice track. It just never seems to deliver on its promise as more than another coolish track from that era. What do you think of this one?
Yeah, I sort of agree with that. It doesn't really seem to deliver fully. Again, you know, kind of has the same problem as the track preceding it. And I think even the drums on this one are even a little too similar to Junge. Like it sounds like the same machine maybe, and like not even that too different of a beat. They don't work well back to back, I don't think. It's just sort of, again, not fully like fleshed out.
Yeah, I find this one pretty weak, honestly. You're right, it has kind of a very similar like slamming breakbeat, although I like that there's like a second much bigger and heavier kick like on top of that beat, which just adds to the heaviness. But then it kind of does this like sort of acid-esque, I think that's where the Lego feet comparison comes in, this kind of like two note back and forth thing. You get these kind of weird like octaved out chords like doing a pretty, I think, a three note pattern. There's these shimmering kind of like clangy string instruments doing a two note pattern, and it's just like, I find it weird. It's like all these two note patterns, and it's just, I don't even know how to phrase this, but you know, like Autechre has this magic that I am impressed with again and again, where they take a very simple melody, sometimes just two notes back and forth, and they make it absolutely hypnotizing. Mm-hmm. And this has like several of those, but none of it is interesting, really. It makes the whole thing sound very meandering, and it makes it almost sound like a pale imitation of Autechre. Like if I was trying to copy Autechre, I would be like, all right, just two notes back and forth. Like that'll be minimal and cool. And it just like does not gel. You kind of get what I'm saying there?
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. It's one of those things, how we were sort of talking about the last one, like are these just kind of, you know, leftover demos or you know, tracks that didn't make it? Because I'm sure the two note back and forth thing doesn't work 100% of the time for Autechre. You know, I'm sure they wind up with stuff like this that, you know, isn't awful, but it sounds like an imitation of themselves. You know, it could have just stayed in the you know, hard drive collection or whatever.
Yeah, it's just like when I was listening to it, I was just thinking like, it's weird how Autechre never seems to screw this up. Like it just seems like they never screw it up. They do like these really minimal melodies and they're always incredible every time. Mm-hmm. And then this one time it's like so bad that I just feel like maybe this was like one of their buddies in Guestcom like trying to do Autechre. I don't know. It's like very mysterious to me. But let's move on to Whatever, remixed by Terra. Listener Joe wrote, I think Whatever came out quite a bit better, but it kind of sounds like coming up with a cool sounding beat in Ableton and then messing around with a bunch of different effect patches. And listener Steve wrote, Whatever is very repetitive with subtle shifts, which produces that head fuck feeling you mentioned recently. So where do you land on this one?
I don't like this one. I agree with Joe. It sounds like coming up with a beat and then fucking around with effects. And one of those effects is my least favorite effect of all time, flange. Uh-huh. I hate it. I hate flange. Is that even how you say it? I don't even know.
I don't know.
It always sounds exactly the same. No matter what song is on, it has the same like tone to it, and it just makes, it's the perfect way to make a song sound like any other song that's used flange. And then I do love the space echo, but it's not used great here at the end. It's just, you know, the pull in the tape. I don't know what it's called on the real one. I have the shitty, you know, digital pedal where you hold the one pedal and it's like it's pulling the tape and it just does that feedback kind of thing. And again, it's the kind of trick. It's like, oh, I know exactly what effect pedal that is that's doing that. Yeah. And that's sort of like, you know, I don't like that, you know, especially in Autechre and stuff. It's like, but my favorite thing is like, how the hell do they make that? And when I'm like, oh, flange pedal, you know, space echo, it kind of like takes the mystery and the fun out of it. And it really does, like Joe said, it's sort of like, it's an okay enough beat, you know, like it's cool. It's got that breakbeat thing that the other ones have done. And then it's just really like, oh, what it'll sound like, you know, through this or through that, you know, it's not my style.
I firmly agree that it is like, it is the fuck around song on this release, but I kind of like it. I don't know why. Like maybe I just like that effect I've never honestly understood the difference between flange and phaser, but maybe there's both going on, but you know, they're just so similar. But it's like, so I was writing like phaser all over my notes and it's like, okay, they're playing with a phaser and you've got this like really fast beat. You've got this like clacking repeating sound. All that shit is going through like phaser or flange. And then the drums get the phaser treatment as well at a certain point. And it's, and like, it's doing so much of that, that it starts to feed back. And again, like, I'm not sure if this is like a bad vinyl rip or what, but it's like feeding back and like clipping like crazy at points. It's just like chaos, like just getting phased into oblivion all the time. And I kind of like, I like it. And I kind of compare it to, you know, the last song, I can't remember what it's called, but the last song on My Bloody Valentine's MBV album, where they're like doing this kind of bad, they have a couple tracks that are doing like this bad drum and bass impression. You know that they recorded this in the late 90s and they don't really know how to do drum and bass, but I kind of like it despite itself. I have like the same feeling about this. I'm like, this kind of sucks, but I like it. I don't know. Maybe I just like Phaser. I don't know.
Yeah, baby. I cannot stand Phaser or Flange. I don't really know the difference in them either. I always feel like Phaser is a stereo effect and Flange is mono. But I don't, you know, I don't know that for certain, but I hate both of them. I know that.
I mean, sometimes it does give you that head fuck. Although, I think it's just because there's so much Phaser going on.
Little quick trivia. You know who named Flange? John Lennon.
I think I did know that, but maybe just because you told me before.
Probably. Yeah, he named that effect. So, shitty effect, but I do like I do like John Lennon.
All right. Well, lastly, we've got Self Impersonation remixed by Feroid with Time Chamber. Listener Joe wrote, the original beat is kind of annoying, but it gives way to one of the more pretty string melodies they've done. It's nice, but doesn't seem as fully developed as you would imagine a remix of an original song to be. Listener Steve, on the other hand, wrote, Self Impersonation has a crunchy beat with a wandering and serene melody, which then builds into a crescendo until you are left with a quiet melody very similar to the mournful melody on Lost, Amazing Closer. What do you think of this one?
I think this is maybe the best one on this EP, but it's still not that great. It's I don't know. It's the one that doesn't just do the fast breakbeat thing. So I can't tell if it's just because this one is sort of different that it, you know, livelies up the record or something. I still don't love it, but I do think it is maybe the best track here.
Yeah, I'm kind of mixed on this because I feel like it's almost like whatever the way I feel about that one, it succeeds despite itself because it starts off with this steaming hisses like chopped into some kind of beat. And, you know, I think Joe mentioned Stomp on the first track here, but I thought of Stomp on this one where it's just like I can see the scene in my head, like some back alley where there's just things hissing and people banging on trash cans and it all forms into a beat, you know, and it sounds like really shitty, honestly. And then the melodies come in very clean and very dreamy and almost reach this weird, like, first I wrote down like the Terminator soundtrack kind of energy, like something kind of like mysterious and just cool about it, like vintage about it almost. And then, you know, I think it's telling that what I like most is when the beat finally stops and you just hear that ambient stuff alone. So maybe not a successful track in that, but there's some cool elements here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that that's sort of the problem, one, with Gescom as a whole, and definitely like this EP. By that, I mean that EP. But it's like, you know, there's cool pieces of it, cool parts, but it just, it does not like come together as a whole and make a great record.
Yeah. Well, wrapping this one up, listener Steve wrote, I love this one, but I can't rank it as high as this. And if Rate Your Music is anything to go by, it seems like most listeners agree. Sounds like you kind of agree, and I feel like I have to agree as well. This one just sounds a little bit more like, I don't know, like a dumping ground or something for half-baked ideas, and there's some like really cool stuff here, but this is just really solid, like I said.
Yeah, I definitely like this more. Yeah, I had to double check that it's so confusing that they're just called this and that. But yeah, I like this more. That is just, yeah, kind of this dumping ground of, you know, half-baked sort of things. I think it's still, like, better than, you know, maybe, like, EP2 or something. Like, yeah, you know, those things. It's not awful, where some of the other stuff from Gescom has been, I think, downright bad. Here, it's just, you know, this one, and again, I mean, that one is not really worth hunting down, whereas this, I think, is worth hunting down.
Well, here's the question. Do you have any temptation to say that they should be considered two parts of one larger release? Because, you know, sometimes Autechre and Gescom would do this.
Yeah, like A1, D1.
Like, A1D1, right? It's like comes in two parts, even though they did release it as one big thing. But same thing with like EP7, for example. These both came out on the same day, you know, and they have like related titles. And I agree that, you know, that is just not nearly as strong as this, but I really enjoyed just having them both in a playlist and just like listening on repeat, going all the way through both of them. I thought that was like a really satisfying experience.
Yeah, I think they probably are sort of intended to be like that, because I mean, too, like the older Ottekker, you know, EPs were even released that way, you know, where you had to buy each half of it and stuff. So I think that's definitely was the intention here. And yeah, it probably does bring that up a little more, you know, if you have it in there with those, you know, better tracks. I think. I did find myself usually listening to both of them, you know, kind of back to back. I rarely, you know, felt like just listening to one of them. So I could see that.
Now, listener Joe concluded his email by writing, "To be honest, I actually like the music of This and That a lot more than quote unquote major releases like Motor or A1 to D1, but neither really feels essential in any way at the end of the day. Listener Steve, on the other hand, explained that This and That are part of the reason why I think 1995 to 1998 was peak Sean and Rob. In that period, you have Garbage, Anvil Vapor, Tri-Repetay, Sounds of Machines, Chiastic Slide, Envain, Keynail remixes, This, That, some really good Guestcom compilation tracks, and some fantastic Ottekker remixes. I also want to note that listener Kevin wrote in to say, love this last episode of Dan just sounding more and more sad about Guestcom. I feel similar. So do This and That do much to improve your overall opinion of Guestcom, or are they kind of inessential as Joe seems to think?
I think they're just sort of inessential. You know, I as much as I do like those two tracks on this, you know, if they were more easy, you know, if they were on a CD, you know, the way like A1 D1, like, you know, put together, it was on Spotify or something, I would say, definitely listen to This. Honestly, if they were, you know, on Spotify, I'd say listen to both of them. But the fact that you gotta hunt these down, either, you know, pay a lot of money on Discogs for records, or, you know, sail the high seas of the internet and find them, I don't know how worth it is for these. They're sort of, you know, even that list that Steve said, you know, the 95 to 98, I agree, that is like peak period, and all the stuff he lists is you know, really excellent. But then, you know, in that huge list, This and That are the maybe the worst things in those, you know. That doesn't mean they're bad, but it's just, you know, definitely hit those other things first, and then if you're craving more, This and That are out there.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like This and That are really good, not great. Couple moments of greatness, possibly.
Yeah.
But, you know, his point there about, like, this being such a peak, it honestly just sort of cements my feeling about Guestcom, that Guestcom was kind of just a mid-90s thing. Like we just forget about everything else, honestly. I've had this sneaking suspicion that the first two Guestcom releases were like Sean and Rob messing around with some friends. Okay, Guestcom EP 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. And then Sounds of Machine all the way through, like, This and That are their side project, like, properly. And then ISSSA is its own thing. I honestly kind of buy the theory that that's like a Sean solo thing, that, like, you know, just he couldn't release it as Ottekker or whatever. It was never going to have a home if he didn't release it as Guestcom. So throw that out. Everything else is like kind of forgettable. Guestcom was just a side project for Ottekker from like 95 to 98. And there's a bunch of really good stuff because Ottekker was really on a hot streak there. Do you buy that?
Yeah, I can buy that. And that, too, if you just count, you know, that little window, it sort of like does make more sense as a side project too, you know, like with everything we've been talking about. Again, you know, it's the more conservative thing, but it does make sense. You know, I can see why, like, Rob and Sean would wanna, you know, they have this, like, you know, history in like being B-boys and stuff, and it, like, I could see why they would want to play around with that and even, you know, put some of that music out there. And yeah, I think I agree too, you know, ISSSA and stuff, like, seems like a different thing, and everything, you know, kind of later doesn't have that same feel to it. So yeah, and I think XCOM is a little better if you just focus on that that little window of it.
Yeah, and it just makes it like more impressive that Sean and Rob are just on such a hot streak.
Yeah,
they had to like use a side project to put out even more brilliant stuff. But all right, we should shift into the listener email section now, because this is going to end up being our longest bonus episode ever. But while we're doing that, I just want to mention that listener Steve recommended a bunch of Guestcom comp tracks, which we'll definitely try to get to in the future. I also want to shout out listener Joe, who's basically our most loyal emailer, and he wrote, "I know this isn't the kind of podcast where you'd usually do birthday shout-outs, but my daughter, Esther Ray, just turned 3 yesterday and has been one of your most devoted listeners from the start. She asks me almost every day, 'Dada, let's listen to Autechre talking.' She also told me yesterday, very matter-of-factly, while we were listening to S-I-O-O, that it's her favorite song, although she calls it the Boya Boya song. If you don't mind wishing her a happy birthday, I'm sure she'd get a kick out of it. So happy birthday, Esther Ray, and just in case I'm screwing up the pronunciation, happy birthday, Essie."
Yeah, happy birthday, and I'm sorry for swearing.
Yeah, sorry about that. Whoops. Okay, Dan, you want to read the first email?
Yeah, this one, it's actually from Finn on Discord. He writes, "Did you guys ever notice the P-I-O-B in P-I-O-B mix from the Garbage EP? Might as well stand for Pleasure is Our Business, the Guestcom slogan."
This is confirmed as far as I'm concerned. Like I didn't even think of that, but that is for sure what it is, right?
I mean, what else? P-I-O-B, you know, what else could that be? I'm glad I don't have who it was in front of me, but somebody alerted me to that on Discord to make sure we saw it too. Yeah, I mean, it's gotta be, especially the time period, you know, it's gotta be. I think that too lends a little more credence to a lot of Guestcom maybe just being Autechre.
Yes, I think so too, because we never like sort of returned to this, but the fact that like Pleasure is Our Business and Guestcom gets sort of shouted out on like Incunabula, mm-hmm. I forget what else, even the Anti-EP possibly, like there's some allusions, and it's like, why would they do that? You know what I mean? It's like they're like sort of suggesting that they're a member, like why on their first album would they be like, by the way, I'm a member of this side project, like check it out, you know? Yeah. It's like I think it's just so obvious that they just basically are Guestcom.
Yeah, I think what I've come down to after all these episodes is Guestcom is solidly Sean and Rob and sometimes one of their friends or some of their friends hop on, but I think it's essentially always Rob and Sean, unless it's really bad, and then we'll pretend that it wasn't.
Yeah, because they kind of screwed themselves, honestly, because they, like, here's where they screwed up. They made every album amazing, and then they made every EP amazing. You don't do that, because EPs are where you get to screw around, mm-hmm. and now they have no outlet to screw around,
exactly.
So they had to make a side project, because they have no room to do it.
No, I'm glad you came to that, because you're right. You know, EPs usually are the just kind of throwaway for the super fans, which that had to become what Guestcom is. You know, Guestcom is the throwaway thing for the super fans because the EPs are so good. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, speaking of acronyms, listener Torin wrote, "I love the idea that LSEC means L sequence. In addition to L as the 12th letter of the alphabet, it also occurred to me that L is the Roman numeral for 50, and each part of LSEC is roughly 50 minutes in length. Given AE's known numerological inclinations, that may not be a coincidence, but a deliberate conceptual choice. I share your sense that LSEC's experimental, unconstrained by format structure is ultimately a bit awkward. It just doesn't deliver readily listenable chunks the way NTS does, but it's cool to consider that the particular 50-minute parsing was intentional, and no part is exactly 50 minutes after all, so each could be seen as seeking that target sequence length, with part 5 finally coming closest." Now, that's what I call a great overthinks it. What do you think about that?
You know, that is a good overthinks it, and normally, you know, all these sort of conspiracy theories with band, you know, I've been following the Donda rollout the past few weeks and stuff,
yeah.
And, you know, people are like, oh, the moon's out on the 5th, and that's when his mom, yeah. You know, garbage like that. This actually seems more plausible, and you know, something like more, you know, Autechre would maybe do, because there is always like sort of these allusions in, you know, the names of the record, you know, XI 11,
right.
You know, they do that stuff a lot, and you know, I didn't think about L, you know, being 50 and everything, but yeah, I mean, I could see it. I like it. I'll allow it.
Because kind of like we talked about this, but it just doesn't make much sense that they made this album that was like celebrated as like shattering traditional album formats, and then they chickened out of that by dividing it into little album length chunks. And yet it doesn't feel like album length chunks because they're just not like satisfying albums, quote unquote, as individually. So maybe there is something about 50 minutes being kind of something they're after. I'm not sure. Listener Jordan weighed in on this as well, writing, last episode you were talking about the title Elsec, and I think I figured out the name. It's called Elsec because Elsec is an elephant of an album. It's a 6-hour long elephant-sized sequence of tracks. Therefore, it is named Elsec. It's not their 11th album. That was XI. Wanted to bring this up because I feel like I can't remember, honestly. I didn't go back and listen, but like I feel like I kept saying L was the 11th letter of the alphabet. I meant to say 12th. I don't know why I was screwing that up, but... What do you think of the elephant theory? I feel like if they were going to go elephant should be the elephant. And it's too short.
That's exactly what I was going to say because I always think of elephant as elephant in my mind. So it's hard to switch that to Elsec. So I'll stay with elephant.
All right, well, what's next?
All right, here's some more from listener Joe, who writes, there are a lot of moments on mini disc that have to come from AE's experimentations for the LP5 to Confield era, since there are so many similar sounds. I imagine that in learning how to create the kinds of tracks that they did on those digital era albums, they probably had tons of interesting experiments that ended up not getting used, and some of them ended up here. I might be totally off on this, but I imagine that's to some extent, mini disc is a look into the creative process of these albums through small cutting room snippets.
Yeah, I just don't know about this. I mean, I could kind of imagine that like they were working on their first, let's say, digital patches and stuff around this time of LP5, and that, you know, patches, I don't even know how to articulate this. I'm going to screw it up because I don't know what I'm talking about, but it's like I imagine like they've designed some patch or something, and then you don't have to play the sequence, you just play like a burst of the sounds or something. So I could kind of imagine that that's where it came from. Like, oh, we got all these patches we're working on. We'll just use those as the blips. But what do you, I mean, maybe that's just bullshit. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I could see it. You know, just thinking of like myself, like making music, you know, a lot of times like in finding a synth patch or something, like I do sort of like just mess with, you know, a burst of sound kind of thing first. And so I could see that, you know, I'm sure that they record probably everything so that they can, you know, redo it and whatnot. But also because of I forget the guy's name, but the noise artist that they like worked with in it, it just sort of feels like maybe stuff made specifically for mini disc.
Yeah, I think we'll never know, but it's an intriguing thought for sure. I want to note that Joe also added, I know that minidisc is supposed to be listened to on shuffle, but honestly, I think it's far more enjoyable to listen to straight through. When listening in order, it sounds a bit like the 7th or 8th disc on one of the $700 Stan editions of a Dylan bootleg series release, where you get a ton of outtake snippets from a certain song all in a row. When listening to it on shuffle, it just sounds like the kind of modern art project that isn't my cup of tea. On that note, though, listener Cameron alerted us to a 2021 album called Mega Bear by a group called Me Rex. Cameron explains that it consists of 52 tracks, most of them only 30 seconds long, and like minidisc, it's designed to be played in random order. He continues, stylistically, it's vastly different from electronic music. It's best described as anthemic British indie pop with a touch of twee, so if that's not your cup of tea, this record isn't likely to win you over. However, if it is your thing, you will at least have an interesting experience spending the 30 minutes it takes to get through a randomized listen of Mega Bear. Granted, its parameters are far more limited than the relatively open sonic canvas Guestcom gave for themselves on minidisc. From Me Rex's own blurb on their Bandcamp, the majority of tracks are performed at 120 BPM in 4/4 time and in the key of B flat. So they definitely have more of a shot at pulling it off. Regardless, I would put it in the successful category for this kind of experiment. Not every transition works, and it can occasionally lurch and even get pretty repetitive, but when it works, man, it really fucking works, and I've had a few profoundly moving moments with this record. So first off, did you give Mega Bear a listen? Does it feel like a more successful version of what Guestcom attempted with Minidisc?
I did listen to it, and it's successful in the sense that it kind of just feels like they're playing one 30-minute song, and you can just flip the sections around. I'll say I did not enjoy it. I don't like that kind of music.
I knew you would hate it.
Yeah, I pretty much hated it, but It was, I mean, it's definitely an interesting idea, and it is cool. I think it's sort of a different thing than what Minidisc is attempting, even though it is this like randomized shuffle sort of thing. It's just like, you know, Guestcom, I think, was like, it's all these, you know, random sounds and parts and stuff, and it's basically creating like a different version of chaos each time. Whereas this record, it like I said, it sort of sounds like they're playing one 30-minute song. I mean, like the listener said, everything's in the same key, or pretty much in the same key, BPMs, time, signature, everything. So it really does just sort of feel like one song where you can move the parts around, which is, I mean, that's a neat idea. It's definitely not my cup of tea.
Yeah, it's funny because I thought I like brought these two emails together because they both use the cup of tea phrase in like entirely different contexts. But anyway, I mean, I was kind of like, I don't know, I was kind of amazed by this Mega Bear album. It's not like the kind of thing I like to listen to that much, but it works really, really well because you're just kind of listening on shuffle. And yeah, it's basically like one 30-minute, like kind of prog type, you know, twee pop song. But it's because it's like 30 seconds for each little section, and it just transitions perfectly, like almost every time, I feel. And yeah, I think it's an entirely different thing from what Guestcom was after with Minidisc, but it's kind of more like what Guestcom promises with Minidisc. Like the way Minidisc is sold is what this album actually achieves. And then you kind of realize like, oh, Minidisc is actually just like a weird conceptual art thing, and it doesn't flow together or anything at all anyway. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I think you're right there. Like this delivers on the, you know, promise of Minidisc. Minidisc is a, you know, sales pitch. I agree with you.
I just kind of thought that like it would be so cool. Maybe it would be corny, but it would be so cool if like, let's say 90s era Autechre, or even now, I guess it would work. If they did the same like limitations as this Mega Bear album does, where it's like everything is the same BPM and the same key, and they just made like 30-second of those like classic minimalist kind of tri-rep-esque loops, and you could just listen on shuffle and on repeat, and it would just like eternally churn out like one endless song of different permutations, like that would be badass, would it not?
I don't know. I don't need a gimmick, you know what I mean? I think it worked for Guestcom. You know, if they want to do something like that, maybe slap the Guestcom name on it. I think Autechre is like above the gimmick of that.
I agree, but I feel like it would be really fun, just selfishly. Okay, what's next?
All right, speaking of bootlegs, listener Dan wrote in to say, you may have already have this planned, but there are some really good bootlegs out there, and a few of them are high-quality soundboards from different eras. I'm not sure if anyone's ever compiled the list of the best of them, but there are some real gems. I think going through some of these could be illuminating. I might also add that, for whatever reason, I just can't seem to enjoy Boards of Canada. I actually call them Board of Canada. yeah. Just seems like sonic wallpaper. Am I broken?
Yeah, so first off, is he broken?
Yeah, definitely.
I kind of feel, I understand, because I feel like when I'm not listening to Boards of Canada, like if I haven't listened in a long time, I always feel like they're just okay. And then as soon as I put it on, I'm like, damn, I forgot how amazing this is. Because it's like, it is really simple, and they kind of, this might be controversial, but it's like they kind of haven't changed their entire career that much. But it's so good.
Yeah, I'll agree. It is like, you know what you're getting into. You know, when you're putting on a Boards of Canada record, you're getting a specific mood. But that mood is just so great that it's, you know, I almost like if they release a new album or something, I'd maybe even be a little disappointed if it wasn't just more of the same. You know, normally yeah. I wouldn't feel that way, but it is like when I got Boards of Canada, I sort of, you know, I want that mood that it gives me, you know.
Yeah, but it's funny too how there's like, it's like the slightest shift in emphasis is like really exciting from them because they're so sort of static. It's like, you know, I don't know, Tomorrow's Harvest or whatever that album was called. It's like kind of darker than they've been before. So it's like really exciting. Like, holy shit, this one is so dark, but it's like not actually that much darker. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I love them. I don't want to worry people who are like because people have been writing in to recommend that we cover Boards of Canada. I don't want to worry you guys. I fucking love them, but it's just like they're interesting how they are so non-changing in contrast to Odd-Tekker. But second off, we'll definitely have to do some bootlegs, right? Like maybe even we could select some of the absolute best for listeners who haven't spent much time in that world.
Yeah. In fact, somebody on Discord like messaged and asked me about one specific, the Glasgow show. And for some reason, I could have swore we already did that one.
But we canceled the episode because some personal stuff come up.
Okay, that's why. Because I was like, we already did that.
I think we prepared for it and we came up with brilliant things to say, and then we never recorded it.
Oh, okay. All right. Good. I'm glad I'm not crazy. Because I brought up our page on like Apple, and I was like, I looked through every, I was like, he would have put it in the title. I was like, Gabe would have put that in the title. And I even was like Googling like Gonkcast. I was like, I know we've used that. We've done that. But okay. All right. That I remember now too. Why we did.
Solved.
Yeah. But, okay. Yeah. So yeah, definitely we should do that one again.
Yeah.
And I definitely, I was even looking today on Rate Your Music. There's a bunch listed and, I want to track them down, you know, just for my own sake. And, definitely. I definitely want to get into bootlegs.
All right. Well, here's more from listener Joe, who writes, in some ways, the music on ISSSA sounds similar to Draft. I'm sure they use a lot of the same techniques with elements of real instruments mixed with digital sound design. However, I think a lot of the song ideas here are far more interesting than what would eventually go on Draft. The music sounds less produced and more raw, and it really was only secreted, and did not have the additional nurturing by Odd-Tekker before being put out. I like to think of ISSSA as a potential other direction Sean and Rob could have gone in for Draft, one that would have sounded a lot more fresh and exciting than what they eventually went with. What do you think about that? Is it the rawness that makes ISSSA kind of better than Draft?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, if I'm remembering correctly, I think one of our biggest complaints with, you know, Draft 730 is that it did that 730, if it meant, you know, like the seventh version, you know, 30th permutation of the seventh version or whatever we came to, you know, it sort of feels like that, you know, it feels like overly worked on. And, you know, ISSSA, like, it sort of has like a similar sound palette, but yeah, it definitely doesn't have like, you know, seven permutation, you know, work through a kind of thing to it. It does like sort of still have that rawness. And I think that's what, you know, like there's moments in Draft that I really like, and you know, pieces of Draft I really like. It just, my biggest complaint is that it's overworked. And so I think that that's definitely true.
See, my complaint with Draft is that some of the stuff is overworked and some of the stuff is underworked. Like, there are tracks that just sound like really kind of straightforward, like bangers, and that's fun, but they just sit really weirdly next to like completely twisted, deconstructed messes like that IV thing.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
You know, stuff like that, or like Taper or whatever, Syrup Hair, like these are like really twisted, and then you've got like Theme of Sun and Roundabout and like V Proc that are just like really straightforward bangers. So I do feel like Draft kind of hits that sweet spot of, you know, we mentioned this last time, but like Xylin Room, which is like not underworked, but not overworked. And I feel like everything on Draft hits that. So maybe we could call that raw. What's next?
One more from listener Joe, who says the Skull Snap EP was hard to find, but it was totally worth it. At first, I had the feeling that it was another release that they probably weren't the main drivers on, but after a few minutes, I started to feel that this might be the missing link towards XI. First of all, I'm 99.9% sure that they reused and reprocessed the beat on Seventh Stone Triangle for Blade Lores. In general, though, the hip-hop feel, which seems miles away from Overstep, definitely feels like a step in the creative direction of XI.
Yeah, we talked about this probably enough last time, but I didn't like make that connection, which is there is a huge missing link between Oversteps and XI, right? Like that is one of the most mysterious jumps in Odd-Tekker history, because there's just nothing to explain it. And like Move of 10 doesn't go in any close to the direction of XI either, right? So there's just like, it just is not clear how they got there. And you know, we speculated this, but I feel like that's even better evidence that that maybe Skull Snap is them just playing with kind of old school hip hop sounds in like a real, like just playground kind of way. And then they obviously like fully reinvented and like absorbed those influences for their own stuff on XI. But that could provide something of the missing link there.
Yeah, yeah. I think, I don't remember exactly what I said last time, but I think it does sort of have that, you know, you got to learn to paint before you learn to unpaint kind of Picasso thing, yeah. Whatever. And so, yeah, I could see that. It could just sort of be that playground. Why they chose to release it, I'm not 100%, yeah. You know, but they did, so whatever. But yeah, I mean, I could definitely see it. It's when you say it's the missing link, it sort of like feels like it's going to be like something that really sounds like a bridge between Oversteps and
right,
XI.
Right.
And perhaps like that doesn't exist because it is like such a crazy gap. You know, maybe this is sort of the closest thing that we could have to that.
Yeah, it would be like it's like a missing link that is not a missing link. There is no missing link. It was just like a straight up hard reset.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the way they got in the mood was to just like do a pure genre exercise about it. I mean, I could buy that for sure. But all right, we'll have to cut it here, even though there are still a few more emails in the backlog, which we'll definitely get to next time. As you can tell, this is getting much too long for a bonus episode. But thanks so much, by the way, to everybody who writes in all the time. I always worry that I don't say thank you to you guys enough, but seriously, your emails add so much to the show, so thanks.
Yeah, if you've got any Autech or opinions or hot takes you want to share, we want to hear them. Gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Next episode in a week, Autechers Best Remixes. Again, send us your thoughts on those. Gonkcastpod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out. Subscribe. Leave a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Look us up YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, @GonkcastPod. And we'll see you next time.
See ya.